This is Hot Shot Archery's Outdoor Podcast.
The show starts in 3, 2, 1, go.
Hey everybody, what's happening? This is Robin Parks, and this is the Hot Shot Archery Outdoors Podcast. Today, as usual, I have Logan Chartrand. Logan, how's it going?
It's going well. How are you?
I am doing good. And for our regular listeners, you might notice there's just a slight change in order of voices. And it's almost kind of a bittersweet episode. Here we are on episode, what did we decide? 49 or almost 50 already, right, Logan?
Yeah, for this episode is 49, damn near 50 so far.
We're going to be going in a slightly different direction for the future, and Logan's going to peel away just a little bit from this podcast and put a little more focus on his own individual podcast. He's still going to be a regular co-host / guest, and he's going to be helping behind the scenes as he always has. But before we get in and talk maybe about deer hunting and how that ended up, why don't you go ahead and tell our listeners, for those that don't already listen to your other podcast, what the title is, where it can be found, and I know it's similar topics to what we talk about on here, but with your own creative twist. So let everybody know what your podcast is all about. And the reason I haven't said the title yet is because I can't hardly say the name. So go for it, Logan.
That's awesome. No, and I'm actually really excited for this opportunity. Like you mentioned, changing up maybe some responsibilities a little bit, but still being around, maybe not being heard quite as much, and transitioning, using that opportunity to put some more focus into my podcast. I think we talked about it on a previous episode, but I kicked off in what I think like July of last year, a podcast called The Nemophilist, which is a really, really old word for a lover or a haunter of the woods, somebody who enjoys woodlands and woodland scenery. And I'm kind of a nerd anyway, so when I saw that old word a while back, a couple years ago, that name had kind of been bouncing around in my head. And don't feel bad, when I first picked it out, I didn't even know how to say it. Like, I went online and started Googling, like, what is this? I forget what I did, but I'd Google it and then go to the ones where they will like translate it and read it out. I'm like, oh, okay. So even the like the start of it, the name I was originally going to go with or playing on it, I'm like, oh, that's not how you say that at all. So yes, The Nemophilist is outdoor focused. It's not just archery or hunting, which are two things that obviously I do a buttload of, but it's an opportunity for me to sit down with people who do all sorts of things outdoors. I have talked to people who love to go on casual hikes, actually learned about some trails here in the St. Louis region that might be cool to take my family out on. I have talked with people who are into growing big deer, real estate agents. In fact, coming up next week, my episode is talking with a knife maker. So it's kind of anything that I would be interested in. It all spawned with, I don't have the money to do everything I'm interested in or the time. We've talked a lot about prioritization of time and how we make choices to make sure that we have time to hunt. And I just don't have time to get into making knives and ice fishing, things like that. I've talked to Sarah Lamson from Lakewood Cases, and we talked about her move to Wisconsin and getting into ice fishing. I've talked to people who hunt the mountains of Idaho. So it's all sorts of things. It's going to be whatever kind of my mind is on at the moment. It'll be a lot of hunting stuff because obviously that's what I'm super passionate about. Had an episode about trapping. I would not tell anybody to go listen to that episode to learn about trapping. You're not always going to learn about how-to stuff, but it was when my son and I had a chance to hang out in the woods and out in the country and do a little bit of trapping and what's like for him. So it's a great way for me to also get my son to speak up a bit more, find his voice. It's about what our life is like. It's about the lives of people like you and I who have regular jobs, but still, you know, are working in the outdoor or archery industries and involved in some level, whether it's representing companies or actually being employed by or working for companies. So it's more the philosophical thing. My episodes tend to run 90 minutes to 2 hours at times. It's just a long form casual conversation, usually having a drink, meeting over, you know, Zoom or Facebook Messenger or phone calls, things like that. And, you know, again, it's not always best practices or tips. Here's how you're going to kill a big buck, or here's everything that you need to know to get into ice fishing or knife making. It's really just me being a curious person and exploring what the hell is this like from the people who actually do it. Instead of me thinking about ice fishing as sitting on a bucket out in the middle of the lake and being absolutely miserable, which is what I envision when I think about ice fishing, I want to be able to talk to those people who have the fancy ice shacks and basically are pulling a motorhome or a mobile home out on the ice and fishing through it. So yeah, similar topics. If you are into archery and hunting, you're going to like it, because during archery and hunting seasons, and it's pretty much always hunting season, those are things that I'm going to talk about. But if you have any interest in, you know, other outdoor activities or the people, it's as much an exploration of the people who do the activities as it is learning about the activity itself. So again, the Nemophilist, it's Nemophilist. You can find it anywhere that you can find the Hot Shot podcast. If you are into long form conversation, if you're into learning about people, would love to have everybody check it out. I'm not looking to compete with the Hot Shot podcast or any other podcast that's out there. I think there are some really phenomenal things, just trying to bring more content, share more stories about the people, and who knows, in the end, maybe break down some stereotypes about what do people think about those of us who are in and around the industry. You know, we're not all wearing bedazzled jeans and blow drying our hair before we go hit up the trade show, or wearing flannel and vests all the time. So lots of different people out there. It's my opportunity to help show that and continue to contribute to the sport, just like we've been doing with the Hot Shot podcast, but being able to do it, you know, on another level once again.
Yeah, that's great. And we've said to each other, personally on this podcast out loud, often many times, that the biggest surprise, or I guess positive / bonus to us starting this podcast, has been our interactions with people that have been guests. And, I think your podcast is really going to take that to a whole different creative level. Where the Top Shot Archeries podcast is going to be, of course, it's going to include people in the industry and people and their experiences, but maybe a little more focused on the experience and, the how to parts of experiences. And, it's really important for people to understand that, the direction that we went with this podcast to start, the direction you're at with yours, the where we're still at with this Hot Shot podcast, is we're not trying to commercialize it. We're not competitors. We're not trying to compete with anyone. Unlike some podcasts, and I'm not even a big podcast listener. Here I am talking on a podcast and I'm not a big podcast listener. That's the first thing I told you when you asked me what I thought about getting going with this. But what I have noticed is I've came across a handful of podcasts that are more on the commercialized side. And often you hear about a host saying, well, this is my last episode. And you can tell that it's for sponsorship reasons, commercial reasons, that one of their group or host, as a group of hosts, is disappearing, because, you know, that's just what happens in this industry. You get going with something, you collect sponsors, if sponsorship changes, you know, you got to roll with that. And so luckily we're not rolled into that. What we're talking about now has nothing to do with that. This is just simply you transitioning to a little more behind the scenes with the Hot Shot and being able to focus on your own. And I'm sure we'll have guests that the same guests will be on both at times. I'm sure we'll be on, I'll probably be on yours. You'll be on mine at times.
You better be on mine at some point in time.
So, with all that said, without dragging it out, we just kind of want to let the listeners know that they'll probably notice a little bit of change in what they're listening. And for the listeners out there that tuned in for Logan and they don't like listening to me, well, you could still find him. Not a big deal.
Yeah. Sorry, Mom. You'll have to go listen to only on my other podcast, because I'm pretty sure that's the only person who's been listening to all this for me.
So enough of that. So, what's been going on with you in the outdoors lately? I know you did some trapping. I've been having a hangover the last handful of days because I'm done deer hunting. But
you're done.
I'm done. Yes, I guess we could talk about that. I guess.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, because I'm in full on prep for next deer season mode. I actually moved a mineral site, so there's one still there. I'm not going to go dig the minerals out of the ground. But I've been moving that, repositioning trail cameras more for inventory again, getting them out of, you know, scrape lines, things like that. But you've actually been hitting it hard. And I know we've talked about it a lot since right before Thanksgiving, but even just these last couple weeks, you've been going really, really hard right to the finish line.
Yeah, I did. And I don't think that I really even let on my social media post about just how much I've been going and how hard I've been at it. I hunted a little bit in Missouri, but mostly in Illinois since Thanksgiving. And the reason was the property that I had permission on over there. There was a lot of deer using it late season because there's a lot of food source there. And amongst that big bunch of deer, there was a good handful of big mature bucks. And I probably was seeing shooter mature bucks 2 out of 3 sits, hunting only evenings. And so that kept me going. And there's a handful of stands that I was rotating around depending on the wind and, you know, trying to be a step ahead of them. I was usually a step behind, I'll say that. But I would say that I was averaging going over to Illinois to hunt about 4 days a week, probably, and hunting in general 5 or 6 days a week. And that Illinois hunt for me means getting the truck, drive 2 hours, hunt, you know, for 2 to 3 hours, and then drive back home 2 hours. So it was wearing me down, but it was fun. It was worth it. I didn't kill anything. We talked on a previous podcast about a new stand that I had put up and made a really bad mistake of not drawing while in the stand and just getting a feel for the different angles. And it cost me because the first time in that stand, I had a buck at 25 yards and my elbow was hitting the trunk of the tree because of the way it leaned, and it just couldn't get anchored in a shot off in time. I needed about another half second. So that was a bad mistake on my part. But what you don't know, what you haven't heard yet, is the second to the last day of the season over there in Illinois, which ended on the 17th. We actually had a doe in heat get chased by us. Eric Gregory was with me. And at first it was kind of like, you know, what's happening here? But the buck was so hard on her and dogging her so hard, they went by us 50 yards away, that she had to be in heat. And as they went past us out into the field, the next thing you know, there were 5 other mature bucks trying to get in on the action.
What? And so when here was it this is. Again?
This was like January 14th, I think.
Wow.
Yeah. So here it is, January 14th, and yeah, like the woods are going crazy around us, the woods and the fields. And To make a long story short, Eric said, "Here comes a deer," and there. And I got my binoculars on. It was a really nice buck, a really big buck. And it was coming from the direction those deer ran. And I didn't realize it at the time, but this buck was backtracking that doe scent. And he was gonna basically pass by us in on the field edge 20 yards away, I thought. But what happened was he got about 45 yards away and ducked into the woods. And it didn't click to me that's where the doe would win. And now all that doesn't matter. What matters is I stopped him at a shooting lane that I thought was about 42 or 45 yards in a shot. It turned out that he was really about 51 yards. Now that didn't matter too much because where I held and everything, what mattered was my arrow barely ticked a limb on the way and made just a slight left turn, but was still, and that's the reason I know this is because looking at the video, just so everybody understands, I knew something went wrong. I didn't know what. So it ticked something, made a slight left turn, but then ticked something else and made a hard downward turn. But here's the even worse kicker. The second thing it hit startled the buck so bad that he dropped down. And even though my arrow took a hard downward turn, it was still going to hit him.
Oh.
And at the very last millisecond, my arrow just dead centered a little sapling that was about 3/8 of an inch thick. And that sapling saved that buck. So,
oh my! Like the trifecta.
He got lucky three times. Yeah, three times in the span of about a 5-yard stretch, he got lucky. And those were branches that I couldn't see with my naked eye. I had to go frame by frame on the video to see, because it was starting to get dark. It was well within shooting light, of course, but you know, getting darker in the woods, and
it doesn't take much to deflect an arrow, though, and that stuff gets hard, especially as it gets further away from you towards dusk. It's like there's a lot of times like, okay, my range has now been drastically reduced because what I looked at all afternoon that were wide open shooting lanes, I don't know, like I can't tell anymore. And I've done what you did before, but never still almost pulled it off to have the heartbreak of having 3 chances and him avoiding all of them.
Yeah, it was
in the same shot.
Yeah, in real time there, Eric and I both thought that I must have hit the deer because of the sound, the way the deer acted, and where we could see, you know, the last place you could see my lot of knock was right in front of the deer. And the question was, well, where? And we watched the video over and over and over in slow motion, and we just couldn't get it figured out. Now, the answer was easy to see when I went and got my arrow that was laying there. There was like literally no blood, no hair, no anything. It was only after I got home and did the frame-by-frame study of the video that I figured out exactly each one of those 3 steps that saved the buck, the last being the final straw. I mean, it was a little bitty and just the exact right place to keep that arrow going from going through the deer, so...
Was it stuck in that sapling when you found it?
No, what it did was it hit it, and it didn't go through it like dead center it. It just hit it and almost stopped the arrow dead. Like it hit it, kicked it to the side, and then the arrow was laying there. But it was so close to the deer that to the naked eye, we thought, did I hit him? You know, did it hit his leg, or what's happening here? You know, or did it go through him? And it was a weird thing. It was no question it was a miss when I went and got the arrow, but it's just a great example of, you know, so many times we hear people talk about getting a shot and what they think they saw versus what really happened. And the only way to really know in this case was the video. And without that video, I would have never been able to piece it together because I really thought that I hit the deer by the naked eye, you know, with my naked eye.
Right. That would be the weird part to me. I've had a shot like that before where I shot, animal acted or reacted like it was hit, and my arrow's laying there. It's not like buried under leaves or anything. It's just laying right in that area. I'm like, what? half. I could only imagine climbing down, think you got it, and you walk over and there's nothing. I would have been like, what in the world? Like, so my arrow just stopped in midair. And I mean, I would have thought, oh, I must have, I probably hit something. I'm sure as you're watching your lighted knock flick all around. But that would be the weirdest part to me, is getting down thinking, okay, let's go see if we can find some blood. And there's not anything. Like I say, even on my arrow, I was like, there's zero sign that it looks like I just dropped it out of my quiver. That's how it was laying there. That's so strange when those kind of things happen.
Yeah, it is a great example of just the weird things that can happen. And without that video, a lot of times they're just totally unexplainable.
Oh, but and thank goodness.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, thank goodness for a lighted knock, because not finding that, if you can't find the arrow easily, and then you're looking around, so you're wondering, again, did you hit it? If you don't have that video to go back to and check it out, I mean.
Without video and a lighted knock, if I would have got down and not found the arrow, we would have backed out of there and I would have came back the next day. And I can promise you, we would have looked all day long for that deer or the arrow, like all day long, because the sound of it, the way it looked and everything, it would have led us to believe that I hit it, but it was probably low and probably far back. So it would have been a thing of, well, it's going to be way cold tonight, so no big deal. We'll come back in the morning. And there's just no way that without an arrow for an answer, a deer for an answer, that we wouldn't have just looked all day, you know?
Yeah, we would have had to go back to what, episode 43. I just looked it up on October 27th and listen to our I Shot a Deer Now What episode.
Exactly.
As you were saying that's exactly what I envision is, okay, now I got to pull in all the experience, all the previous things that have happened, all the knowledge, and say, based on this, what do I think happened with this deer? And then, like you said, you're probably in for a really long grid search, or maybe find that arrow laying right there when you go back to check for blood again.
Yeah, exactly. And the absence of blood, but no arrow, wouldn't have told me that it was a miss. It would, you know, my conclusion would have been, well, maybe it hit him a little high, or it hit him somewhere that did without an exit hold, or, you know, there's a lot of good reasons for not finding blood. That doesn't mean you didn't kill the deer. So that wouldn't have helped. It could have, it definitely would have had a big, big difference in effort put in. Now the outcome would have been the same. We would have never found the deer, obviously, but
but again, thank goodness for video, so that you didn't have to go do all that.
Yeah. I mean, now the negative is I can look at it and see how freaking big that deer was. I mean, he was, I don't use the word giant for deer very often, but he was what I would throw the word giant on for an 8-pointer for sure.
That's a heartbreaking way to wrap up the season.
It is. It's, I seem to have this 80 yard bubble around me that whole time that we've been, you know, that I'd outlined how long I'd been hitting it really hard for late season. Yeah. There's, people can see some video clips that I posted. I'm nowhere near posted all of them. I've just posted a few, but, you know, nice buck, 75 yards, 80 yards, 125 yards, deer walking right toward me that just decide to make, you know, a random turn in the field that they're in. And instead of walking straight to me to be 15 yards away, they end up 115 yards away. And it was a frustrating late season. It was exhausting, to be honest, but it was fun. I learned a lot, actually. I learned a lot because I packed in more late season hunting in these last 6 weeks probably than I've done my entire life, I would say, cumulatively. So,
oh, for sure. Like we talked about with not having the ATA in person and not having to travel out of town for a period of days, I've had to give up on some late season managed hunts at really good places before for things like that. So just having the opportunity, at least you won't look back as hopefully, maybe, who knows if it'll continue on or not. But if ATA goes back in person, you won't think, and what if I would have made more of my time that year that I didn't have to go. You definitely know that you made all of the time that you had available to get those late season hunts and experience in.
Yeah, and there's a lot, you know, been a lot of years where going the ATA kind of just marked the end of season for me. And I'm sure you and others listening as well that goes the ATA, because there might be a few days left in the season or a handful of days only come back. But, you know, you go to ATA, you're exhausted when you get back. You got to recover from that. Got to go to some of us, at least. Me and you have real jobs to go back to. And it's hard, but I can tell you that what I learned in this late season would definitely fuel me to come back from ATA and make sure that if I have, I'll just say a buck tag in this case, a buck tag left, that I would really be putting the effort in and try to utilize whatever number of days was left afterwards. In the past, it's been easy to come home, to shrug it off and say, well, okay. And, you know, 2019 season was a good example where I didn't have any buck tags. So it was really easy to just shrug it off. I was kind of looking for another state to go to, but, you know, I had Missouri tag and an Illinois buck tag left at this point. And in the future, I definitely will be making plans to use those late season days, because, man, I sure found, I've always known that late season can be really good, even for big bucks, but I just was able to see so much territory on this particular property because it's so open. And I mean, we were going through these cycles where, you know, I went through all the moon phases a time and a half, almost twice, you know, some of them twice. I saw two full moons, and for example, and I was starting to be able to say, okay, like 4 weeks ago, this is what the deer were doing. This is when they were coming out, and seeing those type of correlations. And it's some of the weather patterns that repeated, you know, like bluebird days versus cloudy days and sprinkling days versus clear and windy days versus not windy. And I've always been a big proponent, you know, like I always say, I don't care about the wind. The deer don't care about the wind. I'll tell you one thing, that if a front comes through late season and picks up from fairly calm to super windy, the deer don't like it. I mean, they're just not gonna, if that happens in the evening, and it happened to me a few times where it was almost calm when we left the truck, but by the time we got in the tree, we were kind of bear hugging the tree. That severe weather change was too much for them. Those are the days that we would be lucky to maybe see one random deer moving.
Wow.
So I could talk forever about all the things that I observed and whatever. It's just pretty cool to take all that in and have the time. And this is a positive. Another positive of COVID was being on a COVID flexibility schedule at my job. It allows me to get up earlier in the morning and work in the evening when I get home, and gave me the flexibility to be able to go over there that much too.
Right. And we've talked about all of that in the past that you touched on. One, the flexibility. Two, late season, you pretty much only need a couple hours in the afternoon. Also talked a lot in the past about always trying to learn something, thinking back, okay, what did I learn from this season? What will I do differently? And what you've seen, I was going to say it a moment ago, is the change in how things like weather impacts a deer from earlier season to later season. Like say during the rut. Yeah. I mean, there's pretty much nothing that's going to stop a deer that's got a hot doe. I mean, I definitely detailed my experience sitting through the first week of November with no hot doe in the area, and what that was like. But to be able to see that and to know, I think that's really going to help build on next year. You know, like I don't hunt a lot of late season. So for me, those are still big learning things, whereas you'll be able to start next late season thinking, okay, last year, this, and this happened. This is what it's been like here, and how we've always said all those different learning moments, all those different experiences that we've had, everything kind of comes together in that moment to help you make what oftentimes seems like the right decision, but still maybe, I think I even joked with you about it, maybe the that 90% or the 10% skill took off and the 90% dropped out of your favor with it. But there's always things, no matter how much you know, there are going to be things that try for the first time or be able to put the time into like you did and know that next time you're that much better prepared to take advantage of those opportunities when they come out and probably learn. Well, I don't know with you. I don't think you'll learn to not push yourself so hard in the late season if it's not great for it. I think you'll still head out and get in the tree stand, but to at least be able to temper expectations based on what you've learned.
Yeah, and really, that's the thing is, I'll put it at 95% or more of my hunts this late season were great, and that's what kept me going. Like there's just so few times in which I wasn't seeing plenty of deer and buck, even if they were far away. Like that, it's, you know, just because they're well out of range doesn't mean they're not moving and you're not trying to get all the pieces of the puzzle together. And that's what kept me going. There's no doubt if I had had two or three bad hunts in a row, you know, that would have said, put the brakes on and take a break and give it 5 days or so, but that never happened. So it's just, you know, again, frustrating, but cool at the same time, frustrating and fun. Aggravating, but yet exciting. You know, there's a lot of words that can go with it, but I can really put it on perspective just with this little tidbit is I was at a actual face-to-face meeting a couple days ago at work. And, you know, everyone at work knows I'm spending a lot of time hunting and that's what I do. And even people that don't really hunt, they like to ask me how the hunt's going. And someone said, well, you know, have you got any more deer? And I said, no, I haven't, not lately. And they said, you know, they asked, well, is it the season over now? I think you've been hunting a lot. I've been seeing pictures and stuff. And I said, yeah, I've been hunting a lot. It's over now. And he kind of looked at me and he goes, well, you sound really disappointed. And I said, yeah, I kind of am. He goes, yeah, but man, that buck that you posted, that was a big buck. And, you know, I had to kind of just sit back and, you know, what's big to someone isn't big to others. And I'm not downplaying the buck I shot. It was no giant. It was a nice buck. And just seeing this person just totally put the season in perspective, you know, and I just had to sit back and think, well, you know, dude, you killed three deer with a bow. One was a nice buck. And, you know, what else can you really expect? And, so it seemed frustrating at the end, but I look back on the season and say, man, there's a lot of people that would be more than happy with the season I have. And so I really am looking back on it and I'm perfectly pleased with it.
Sure. A lot of people, posting recipes for tag soup that didn't even get one. And like I talked about that first week of November, when you think about the mixed bag of emotions for me, that was my mixed bag. It was a great hunt. I saw deer pretty much every day, but it was also very frustrating because I wasn't seeing the deer that I wanted to see, that I expected to see, that I was really trying to put the time in. So for people who, I don't even know if we can explain it, for people who maybe don't feel it, I wouldn't even know what to compare it to. It's like, it's such an awesome thing, but you also were trying so hard when we're out there, for the most part, especially when I go out like by myself or when you're going out and filming, it's not like a buddy hunt or when I take my son and we might just goof off because that's what we feel like doing at the moment. It doesn't always feel like how other people see it because of the time, the intensity. Your last year thinking, well, you know, last year I got three bucks. Why can't I get three bucks this year? It's possible. Now I know that it's possible. I got to figure out a way to make it happen. But it is good at times to have those reminders to step back and be like, oh, you know what? Yeah. While I'm aggravated, I'm still very happy at the same time. It's just maybe my sense of aggravation is displaying a little bit more than my absolute pleasure. And some of that might come from sleep deprivation, being tired, being physically and mentally worn out, being wind burnt from sitting out. I know you posted that one day. Trees were swaying around like crazy.
Yeah, that was one of the examples of what happens when it's calm at the truck and when you get there, it's not.
Yeah, but it's...
Yeah, and also add to what you're saying is, you have to, or you should remind yourself, like for at least for us here in the Midwest, Illinois, Missouri, where we hunt, where I hunt, the deer season is literally a third of the year. And 4 months worth of deer hunting, that is enough time that we kind of compartmentalize in our mind. So part of it was awesome, part of it sucked. You know, that's the way we look at it. You know, we're extremes. At least I am. I'm extreme in the way I think. Really need to put it in perspective and keep it all together and think about it as a whole. And when I do that, like the whole 4 months that I spent chasing deer, like the results were great. You know, of course it could have been better, but it doesn't need to be better to still be great.
Sure. I mean, even weather, you got really lucky to not have terribly crappy weather. So many of my Facebook memories have been popping up, especially around ATA and going out and taking pictures of my truck that looks like a giant iceberg from sitting outside for 3 days. But we didn't have any super nasty snowstorms, ice storms for any real length of time that kept you out, which, again, good and bad, because while you're doing it, it's like, yes, I want to keep hunting. The deer are moving. I need to get out there. At the same time, some of those days are days where it's like, okay, well, I'm kind of forced to have to pause to take a break, recuperate for a little bit, because for people like you and I, they're really, one of the questions that I brought into today was, what are you going to do now that we're in the off season? But there's really no off season either for us. We're right into that next thing, whether for me, not this year, used to be indoor archery, but all that got canceled. It's now thinking about next deer season. It will be prepping for turkey season. Hopefully there are a couple calls or texts coming my way to say, hey, can you tag along with me to go hog hunting tonight and run camera for me? There's always something. So those days where even like weather can give us a break. On the plus side, you were able to hunt because we didn't have bad weather, but on the downside of it, there was not even the break. And you're not the kind of person who's going to say, you know what, even though I'm seeing deer, I'm a little tired, I'll take today off and I'll go back out and hopefully they're still on that same pattern tomorrow.
Yeah. It's funny that you mentioned that about the weather, because Sandy was asking me about how often had I killed deer or even hunted deer in the snow. And it really isn't very often. And, as I look up from above my desk right now, one of my mounts is here and it's a late season deer that I killed 2 or 3 years ago, that it was like 5 degrees when I shot it. And we didn't have any of that going on this late season. I mean, we had some cold weather, but we didn't have any extended, you know, total freeze out kind of weather. And, it when you think about what it's like to be hunting when it's in the teens or single digits compared to, you know, maybe I've spent some time in the upper 20s in the last few weeks at worst. And those are conditions that are a lot easier to deal with. And when you're not dealing with those harsh conditions day after day, that is when it really takes a toll on you physically and mentally. And I didn't have that at all, so that really helped.
Yeah, definitely makes it a lot tougher. I remember a couple years ago, great hunt, and I'm trying to remember because I feel like it was during my rutcation that particular year. I think maybe I had gotten a doe earlier in the season or something. So I was definitely hunting for only a big buck, and I knew that Jack would be coming up that weekend to deer hunt with me. So I was hitting it hard with my bow, but I don't think I had a buck on the ground for whatever reason. And one day I sat in a climber and it snowed and I went out. It was dark. I walked in by what little light of the moon was reflecting off the snow. And I sat there till I think I climbed down with probably 45 minutes of daylight left. It might've been a little bit longer, cause I probably would have fought that out, but it was so icy and cold, and I was actually scared to climb down the tree in this climber because of all the ice that was on it. And I was so exhausted, even though I was up at the farm, didn't have anywhere to be. Like, I didn't hunt that next morning because I was like, I need I need a break. I wasn't as extreme as you get, but it, when you sit through stuff like that, it's just so much more intense. I don't know if it's only the cold. I don't know exactly what it is, but you are 100% right that it takes so much more in weather like that.
Yeah, it, and you know, I don't want to jinx anything because now we'll probably, now that the season is over, that's when I start hating winter and it seems like it drags on. So I'm sure that type of weather that I didn't have to deal with, it will have here as we start looking forward to turkey hunting and hog hunting and doing other things. But everything went right for all this late season hunting I did, except for wrapping a tag around a buck. That's all. I mean, really, it was, that's why it's hard to really look back and be, you know, it can be aggravating, but I'm certainly far from being pissed off about it.
Sure. What would you say is the biggest takeaway or lesson learned from your season this year that started way back on September 15th?
Really, there's two things, and they're both related to this late season. I'm gonna name three things. Number one, people that listen to us know that I got drawn for a primo hunt here in Missouri in a park that had never been hunted. It was a population control type hunt. I, looking back, feel like I really let myself be too ultra focused on that park hunt, and I really missed some prime opportunities, say to be in Illinois trying to fill a buck tag for fear of missing out on just the right days in the park. The park hunt was 30 days, basically the entire month of November, and I really wish I would have kind of went back and forth a little bit, you know, hunted the park maybe a little smarter instead of harder. And I'm going to use that to jump to number two that I learned in the park, but also really learned in this late season stuff, is when you start feeling like it's time to relocate, you really, and you've heard me say this so many times about listening to your gut. If you feel like it's time to move, don't put it off. Don't be a lazy ass. Move and put a stand up where you think you need to be. Because I did that in the park and had immediate better luck and success. Even though I didn't kill a buck, I saw lots of bucks, seen a giant, killed a deer over there where I moved to. And I put off moving for at least 7, 8, 9, 10 days, just thinking where I was at was going to end up paying off. And I passed some nice bucks up there, but it really wasn't paying off. I did the same thing in late season, except I didn't let myself be lazy. And Billy Wheeler helped too, because he helped do some moving. The stand that was put up that my elbow hit the tree, that was a stand he put up for me midday. I moved around a lot in late season, two new stands and a ground blind we put up and brushed in, and bounced around all of those. Like I said, I was trying to get a step ahead. I felt like maybe I was always just a step behind. But so moving when you think you ought to move, just get your ass motivated and do it. And then number three, I've already mentioned this like twice and just in this podcast and at least once in another, is that stupid ass mistake that I made getting in that new stand and not taking a few minutes to just draw my bow and get a feel for the sight picture, you know, on all sides of the tree. I always do that in the new stand, and I didn't do it in that one. And it really cost me big time when, just as it's getting dark, a big buck walks up and it's 25 yards and it's just in the wrong place where I couldn't come to full draw completely without maneuvering myself around. If I would have known I had to maneuver around a little bit, I would have been ready for that, and all that extra movement wouldn't have necessarily happened while I was panicking, you know, trying to get a pin on a deer. Could have totally have turned that whole late season results picture around. So those are the three things that I absolutely picked up on, and so much so that those have been topics amongst my little hunting circle. Those of us that hunt a lot together, we've talked about all those things. And you know, we, the property I spent all the time late season, we're already talking about, you talked about no off season, and everyone knows I use that hashtag a lot. We're already talking about all the observations that I and a couple of the other guys that hunted that property too made in late season, like those are already factoring into where we might put either some permanent blinds or ground blinds where we can't get stands. And moving around was a key, but I'm going to tell you that lesson I learned about getting in that tree, especially because I told myself probably ought to draw a few times and I didn't do it. And the reason I didn't do it was because deer started coming out a few hundred yards away right when I got in the tree, but I still could have got it done. I knew I should have done it. And I mean, it's one of those things, like you tell yourself to do something, you shrug it off, and it just like shooting yourself in the foot.
Sure. And I think that's a good idea, even if you're used to being in a stand, and I'm as guilty as you are for it. I sit there thinking, man, I should probably, my arrows knocked everything. I mean, I got in here, I got settled down, and usually it's like, I don't want to make all the movement and possibly scare something off. Let's just be still and quiet. But even stands that you are used to, get in, draw back a time or two, you know, keep your thumb off the trigger of your release or your index finger, depending on the type of release, and just draw back, move around a couple times, know what you're working with. So like you said, when you do realize, ooh, there might be an issue here, at least you're prepared to deal with it when that situation arises and you're not finding out in the moment that, crap, I need to figure out something to do here because what I thought was going to work isn't working.
Yep, exactly. That's exactly right. I mean, I don't even know how to expand on it other than just take a few minutes and to be prepared. And if it's over prepared, so be it.
Yeah, and I would say you probably made a buttload of noise anyway, getting into the stand more enough for deer to take notice or any game in the area. So a little bit of extra movement probably isn't going to screw things up too bad.
No, I mean, in reality, I was using the excuse that there's some deer in the field 300 yards away. You know, if I can't draw my bow a couple times without getting seen 300 yards away, how can I do it if they're 20 yards away anyway?
Exactly.
So, you know, I mean, it just isn't logical. It was really just me blowing off something that I knew I should do. And the reason I knew I should do it was as soon as I climbed in the stand, like I said, I didn't hang it, but I knew the tree was kind of leaning out forward, like into my back. So I knew it was a little bit of a weird angle. And that's why it struck me that I should kind of check it out. And I didn't. And so there you go.
I bet you will not make that error or mistake next season.
Dude, if I do,
I'll make so much fun of you.
Suicide watch, man. If I do that again, I don't even know. Let's just not even discuss it.
Right. Let's just assume it won't happen.
Yeah.
Awesome, man. Well, we are.
We're getting long in the tooth here on time, but just real quick, you were going to ask me, but I'm going to throw it on you first. Like, what are you doing now? What are you doing towards next season, or what's next for you?
Like I mentioned, normally I would be shooting indoors. At this point, some of the same stuff. There is some timber work that needs to be done on the property. Learned a little bit from our food plots, so starting to think about what that can look like, size, what we need to put into it. I want to build like the Taj Mahal of enclosed deer blinds down where Jack and I have done a lot of our hunting together, and in a pretty close area to where most of my big bucks have come. I'd love to try to get that built and put up. So looking at plans, but also trying to wait for lumber prices to come back down to anywhere near reasonable. So I'd love to do that. Right now, it's just my biggest focus is making sure that the deer want to continue to stay around our property, getting some food out for them, some minerals, and then working on the ground, trying to figure out, you know, what did we learn from where we hunted last year for what types of modifications. Luckily, on a private piece of property, we can say, okay, let's change this. Maybe we can cut that down, clear a lane here. So it's right into keeping deer fat and happy, and then it will be time for turkey season. Before we know it, we'll start getting set up. We don't have to set too much up for turkey hunting. We know pretty much right where we will be. A handful of trees on our property that always seem to pay off, and just getting excited. Probably try to throw some crappie fishing in there. My dad has done a lot of work on a John boat that he's got all set up to be like the crappie fishing ultimate boat that you could have. That's a really stupid thing to say, but I mean, all the fancy fish finders, live scopes, GPS trolling motor type stuff. So hopefully we start to get some decent weather. I would love for my dad to be able to get out and start using his boat, take the boy fishing a little bit, and just trying to find ways to get outside right now. It's I'm like you, I hate winter after hunting season. When I can no longer hunt in it, let's get right back to spring. So it'll just be finding ways to get outside until the weather warms up and we can finally start carrying guns or bows or whatever we may have again and trying to get after some animals.
Yeah, it's pretty much the same for me. We even, when the Illinois season closed, and I say we because Eric Gregory was there, Billy Wheeler was there, we were all on the same property. When it got dark, we actually spent 45 minutes taking a couple sets down, taking a ground blind down, pulling some cameras that need to come in and just get firmware updates and batteries swapped out. And we took that time while we were all there with a side-by-side handy to get a little bit of that off-season work done rather than putting it off. And I actually brought it up to Sandy today that maybe this weekend I probably would be thinking about getting hog feeders going. So that if we get a few, stretches of nice weather, maybe I can go get something killed there. So I haven't hunted in about 5 days, I guess, or 4 days now, and I'm already thinking about when the next hunt's going to be. And the day that Missouri season closed, I already started feeding deer in some of the spots where we can feed them. And just all that sorts of stuff. That's just, it's a never-ending thing for a lot of us, you and I and probably lots of our listeners. And definitely have turkeys on the brain already. I've put in for one Illinois turkey permit. I need to put in for another. Probably will do that tonight. And thinking about planning out-of-state turkey trips and those cameras that we brought in that I just talked about, they'll be going back out soon to keep track of turkeys over there in Illinois especially, and just lots of good things like that. But hogs and turkeys are definitely already on my brain.
Yeah, like we said before, there is no off season. It's just preparing for the next. And hunting is a lot like shooting a bow. A bow isn't something that it's wise to put away for, 51 weeks of a 52 week year and try to use. And like hunting is the same way. If you're not always working on it, always trying to improve, you're not just going to show up in April or November and have the type of consistent success that we've been very fortunate enough to have had over the last few years.
Right. Absolutely. We can get back into that discussion about luck versus skill, and we don't need to do that right now, but hard work doesn't always pay off, like we just explained with my late season, but it does pay off in some regards, even if it's not a field tag. There, you just always are setting yourself up for success if you're always working towards success. And that, I mean, hunting is no different than an accomplishment, anything else in life. I mean, what you're going to get out of it, what you put in. And of course, you may not put much in and still get lucky now and then, but there's no doubt that everything is more enjoyable and successful and goals are fulfilled if you put the time and effort into it.
Absolutely. And the good ones, once you put in the time and effort, they make it look easy. So I would tell people, keep that in mind too. If it's, you're looking at, it's not seeming like it's as easy as what you see, whether that's TV, YouTube, social media in general, there's a lot of work that goes into trying to make it look that easy and having that kind of success.
Yeah, no doubt. If I took the time to put all the video intros from late season to start off, well, here I am again in Illinois, people would understand that sometimes it isn't what it seems. So yes, you are correct.
That's actually my next thing, is I need to get the SD card out of my camera and start editing up all the times that I said, all right, sit number 1 to 5,876, exactly, whatever it was. And one shot of my son getting a buck and one shot of the camera going wild inside the blind as my son was excited when mine came in. So that's what I've got. As we're closing up, any parting shots?
I think just my parting shot is, I'm just going to really say thanks to you for talking me into this podcast gig, because it was your idea. You asked if I would help and was I interested in being a part of it. And my first answer was, well, I'll help you. I don't know how much or what extent I can be helped. And it really turned into more of us starting this together and working on it together and getting it rolling together. And so that's why I just really should say thanks to you, but also remind everybody that just because it's going to sound a little different, that you're not disappearing from the podcast. It's more of just a little bit of refocusing.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I mean, my parting shot would be the same thing. Thank you to all the listeners. We had done some checking and we were many thousands of downloads since this all began a little over a year ago, which super cool. Maybe a year and a half now at this point. I don't even know anymore. But thank you for joining in and doing this. I was excited for at some point in time, the day where this would be happening, where you were taking more control of it. So I'm really excited to see that. And like I said, the reminder that I'm not going anywhere, you might hear me a little bit less. You'll still have my touch on the post-production side of things and doing that. So still involved, just not maybe at the same level that I was before. So I'll still be around. If anybody's got questions, still happy to help address any questions. And I'm still going to be with Hot Shot, like you'd mentioned earlier. I'm not going anywhere. This wasn't a money deal or anything like that that we decided. It's just what is best for this podcast and for mine. So follow along with me on Facebook, Instagram. You can check Twitter, but usually I'm only sharing stuff there that I've already shared somewhere else. So probably not going to see a lot of action there, but if you look for the.nemophilist.lc, and then again, the same places that you find the podcast, unless you're finding it on the Hot Shot website, you can find the Nemophilist. I would love for anybody to subscribe, to leave a rating, and be sure to stay in touch for when Robin's on there, so you can hear the deep philosophical three drinks in conversation that we'll have.
That'll be interesting. We'll have to plan on emphasizing the three drinks deep part of some topic.
And I'm sure there are some topics that we can certainly go three drinks in to kick off. So I'm excited for it. Again, I'm excited for you stepping in more, taking on the primary hosting roles of all of this. And I look forward to seeing how this evolves and how we just continue to make it the best we can for what we're hoping to accomplish.
Absolutely. And I good luck with your podcast. You've already went far enough with it that you don't need me to say good luck. I mean, you've got yourself established. You got good topics, a good guest. And I mean, honestly, for me to say good luck, it makes it sound like you're diving into something new, but you've really went, it's beyond new for you now. I mean, you're just going to be able to pick up what you've already laid down and just keep on laying down tracks. And I know it's just going to get better and better for you. So thanks again. And thanks to all of our listeners. Just real quick, of course, you can email any questions that you might have to podcast@hotshotmanufacturing.com. You can find me on social media pretty much by searching for Aimlo Robin. And of course, Hot Shot Manufacturing or Hot Shot Archery will land you on the Hot Shot Social. So thanks for listening, and we will talk again soon.